I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show.
So it seems like I jumped the gun there, but now I can say it. I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. I don't know if anyone caught that subtle Raul Julia from Street Fighter little bit I just threw in there at the end. I couldn't help myself because I found my voice inflecting and I decided just to go with it. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about some trading card recommendations, some comic book recommendations, some of it from a speculation standpoint, most of it actually, honestly, from a collector standpoint. We've also got some action figure stuff we want to talk about, as well as some more pop culture news, a lot of fun things to talk about this evening. But enough about that. I want to welcome back my my name is Dave Bateman, one of your hosts. For nearly the last 30 years, I've been a professional illustrator and graphic designer. Worked on a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Batman Incorporated, Justice League of America, and Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. And I want to welcome back my co-host. This is Mr. Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks who'll be watching or listening at home some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello, everybody. I am Eric Alexander, also known as BassGod14. That's BassGod14, not BassGod. That's BassGod, like a bass guitar. And I am the co-host of Retro Rogues Live. I am the chief financial officer of a small production company in Arizona called Bad Bob Productions. And currently we are involved with filming a movie called Staycation, which we're going to be going back to California this weekend. As a matter of fact, we'll be driving tomorrow late in the evening to go back to California and do some more work on Staycation.
All right. Very cool. So I'm trying to keep us on track. And because of that, I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyhow, but enough about that. All right, so we're going to go ahead and start off the show talking about trading card. Actually, I'm going to start by talking about the comic books first. I've got a couple of comic book picks, but before we get into that, I have to actually kind of introduce all of you to some rumory stuff going on. All right, so this is coming from the hashtag show. This was posted on the 14th. This is by Nick Santos. And I've seen this kind of bouncing around in a lot of different places, but we're going to just get into this just quickly. If you want to read the whole article, I encourage you to go seek out the hashtag show and find the article actually to read it. So we're just going to do just a little bit of this because I want to use this to set up my picks actually for this first installment here on the Collector's Corners, because we are going to start with the comics first. So it says exclusive Midnight Suns movie in early development at Marvel Studios. Now, it's important to understand this is probably still considered rumor because nothing's been officially announced. Okay, but we're going to do just a little bit of this. So it just says, earlier this week, we talked about how Ghost Rider would be coming to the MCU. Now we're talking about Marvel's next big team-up film, The Midnight Suns. Marvel has over 20 unannounced films, but within those, I think is what he meant, is a heavy emphasis on branching out with their team-up movies. They want to replicate the success of the Avengers with multiple team-up films, Young Avengers, Dark Avengers, / Thunderbolts, etc. Although this week we can exclusively share that Marvel is working on a Midnight Suns movie, which is currently in early development. Now, it's important to understand this is mostly rumor. Had you heard about any of this at all, Eric?
I feel like I always hear these little rumors back and forth about, you know, this particular, you know, set of characters is going to be getting a movie, or that particular set of characters. There does seem to have been like a lot of emphasis on some of these darker characters like Blade, like Ghost Rider, especially tying them into Doctor Strange. Obviously Moon Knight is getting his own show. So I think that there definitely has been a lot of buzz concerning the possibility of all these characters getting together.
Okay, so along those lines, that is what's going to lead us into our first pick for this evening. So I'm going to do the overlay graphic here. All right, so these are our comic picks for this evening. These are both speculation and collector standpoints. These are books that we have highlighted before, but they're worth highlighting again because of there's these persistent rumors that we're hearing about it. And I'm going to tell you exactly why I picked these two books. The first one's pretty obvious. I'm going to recommend Morbius again. This is Morbius number one from 1992. We know we're getting the Jared Leto film actually from Sony, so we know that's coming. But we're not sure exactly how far or in what form Marvel is going to kind of allow, or Sony is going to allow, however you want to look at that. We're not exactly sure exactly how the Spider-Man partnership is going to shake out, if we're going to see Morbius in the MCU or not. However, I do still think this is a good pick because most of the other Morbius books are basically now out of range. You're asking yourself, what do you mean by out of range, Dave? What I mean is primarily the way that I am looking at these is if you had $20 to spend on a comic book or an action figure or a trading card or whatever, so that you can participate in this from a speculation standpoint, participate in this from a collector standpoint, but I'm not asking you to go out and buy a silver, say, recommending a silver key book that's going to set you back a couple thousand dollars. So if you want to get into this realm, if you want to play in the speculation game, this is kind of like an easier point of entry. You purchase the book, you have it in your collection, you think it's kind of cool, you hold on to it, and we see where we are in a couple months. We see where we are like in a year or two, whatever. So that's kind of my thought process with this. So this is the one Morbius book that is a key book. This is a number one book. And this is the one you can pick up still relatively inexpensively. You know, this is still in the $20 range or below. And you can actually get this book and actually Night Stalkers right now roughly for about $40 to $60 and get the whole Midnight Suns arc. Now, let me finish with my second one and tell you why I'm recommending these two books in relation to that pop culture news item that we were talking about at the top of the show. Now, this is Night Stalkers number one from 1992. I have recommended this book on the show once before. The reason I'm recommending this is because Night Stalkers is sort of like the team that Blade is a part of with actually Hannibal King. So this has a lot of connections to Blade. We know that we're getting a Blade project of some kind with Mahershala Ali. We don't know exactly how far that's going to connect into the Marvel Universe either. But both of these books, if you notice on Morbius, it says 3 of 6 and it says 5 of 6 on the Night Stalkers book. That's because both of these books is part of the Rise of Midnight Suns story arc. So this is your early Midnight Suns comics. And the reason I like these two is because there are multiple play. You've got early Midnight Suns appearances, but you've also got a Morbius number one. You've got a Night Stalkers number one. And here's the important thing. All of these coming together in these series again. So if you want to get the whole Rise of the Midnight Suns arc, like I said, you can get it between $40 and $60 on eBay right now, but you can get these two books relatively inexpensively. Night Stalkers, mostly unless you try to buy a graded copy, I'm recommending a raw copy and then maybe you can get it graded if you want. Raw copy of Night Stalkers number one, $10 roughly. Morbius, still under $20, sometimes listings for even less than that. So I still feel like this is a good place to enter kind of collecting, you know, comics and kind of trying to, you know, see if you can benefit off of that Marvel bump. So these are the two recommendations for this night, specifically because of these persistent rumors about Midnight Suns and how all of this may or may not connect into the larger MCU. So had you heard about, we were talking about the rumors, but how do you feel about these recommendations, Eric, based off of kind of what we're hearing and kind of what we're seeing?
Well, I don't think you can go wrong with Morbius because we know a Morbius film is coming out, and Morbius is a highly anticipated film. So what kind of effect that's actually going to end up having, we don't know. We don't have that crystal ball. But I think it's a pretty good bet to say that anything involving Morbius is probably going to have some sort of a bump just because of the film. This other news that we're hearing, I think, just adds to that. It just adds to that hype. So either way, I just feel like you really can't go wrong. Blade is also, I think, a pretty solid one because, again, we know they are going to be doing something with Blade pretty soon. You know, that's beyond the rumor stage. So I think they're both really solid bets.
All right. So there you go. All right. So, again, if you want to search out this article, read it for yourself and think about the recommendations from tonight's show. Again, this was over at the hashtag show. This is by Nick Santos. Again, this is all about the Midnight Suns movie, potentially in early development at Marvel Studios. All right, so now what we're going to do is I'm going to go back to the two screen here for just a second so I can pull up the other graphic and you all don't have to watch me fumble, but you still have to listen to me talk over top of it. You know, one of these days we're going to have a more kind of sophisticated system for this. I mean, I feel like we got a pretty decent system right now, but one of these days we're going to have this all figured out and it's going to be super slick. It's going to be super slick. At least that's what I keep telling myself. It's going to be super slick. It's going to work really great. We almost kind of need like a fancy control room, like they have like in those newsroom shows, right? Like where they do all the stuff. All right, so let's go ahead and do this graphic like this. Okay, so for the trading card picks for this evening, same kind of thing. We're going to be talking about things that have been announced. We're going to talk about things that are in early development, and that's how we're going to kind of go through these trading card picks. Now, all of the cards I'm recommending this evening are Impel trading cards, okay? Now, for this particular card, this is 1991. This is Impel. This is the G.I. Joe Real American Hero series. This is card number 41. This, of course, is Snake Eyes, as you can tell from the graphic. If you're listening at home on the podcast, you might be like, I can't see that, Dave. But this is Snake Eyes. Now, here's the deal. I have officially decided to dub this Snake Eyes rookie card, and let me explain why. There is a card that predates this one that was basically produced by Comic Images. Okay, now Comic Images, what they did is they took, just like their name describes, images from the comic books, they would cut the panels out, and then they would print the cards. Okay, Comic Image cards are nice. I have quite a few Comic Image cards. I've been collecting comic book trading cards as far back as I can remember. And I do have a lot of Comic Image cards. Now, the reason I don't want to recommend the Comic Image cards as Snake Eyes rookie card, in my mind anyway, is because it just doesn't fulfill the normal requirements of, in my mind anyway, like a rookie card. Like, it doesn't have stats on the back. It doesn't have a cool little profile picture of him. Like, it just doesn't feel like a rookie card when you want to talk about sports cards, whether you want to talk about basketball cards, football cards, baseball cards. So the Comic Image cards, which I'm not featuring, the Comic Image card is actually what I would consider to be probably Snake Eyes' first appearance on a trading card, okay? But this is the one that, based on my research, based on my own honest collector's opinion, I'm going to say this is probably Snake Eyes' rookie card. There is another Snake Eyes card from this same set that is later in the set, and that's the one where he has sort of like it's kind of more of the hockey mask kind of looking thing. It's from the later toy where he had he's always pictured with the butterfly knives. If you know not butterfly knives. I forget what they're called. They're a different kind of martial arts weapon. It's not actually a butterfly knife, but anyhow, that particular card, I know some people are saying this is rookie card on eBay and such. I say this is his rookie card because, let's be honest, this is more the classic costume, right? So for me, this is what I'm dubbing his rookie card. Now this card, you can get it a lot of different places. You can get it in a set of G.I. Joe cards. You can actually get it by itself. This card is not going to set you back a lot. You know, we're talking $3, no more than $10. I've seen some graded PSA graded cards for this actually available too. Like if you want to venture down that road, that's actually also an option that is available. However, for me, I prefer to get the raw card, get the raw comic, and if I determine to later on to grade it, that's how I prefer to handle this. The reason I'm recommending this card, pretty obvious. We have a trailer right now for the Snake Eyes movie. I know my earlier reaction and Eric's early reaction to the Snake Eyes movie announcement and what they were doing with it is not terribly favorable, but I still love Snake Eyes as a character. And I still love this card because it's a cool card because I love the comic book version of Snake Eyes. I love the animated cartoon version of Snake Eyes. So if the movie is going to boost Snake Eyes' profile, you know, there's the potential, again, bit of a stretch, but there's the potential that there might be down the road interest in collecting these cards, just like with, again, the 1990 Marvel Impel cards. So that's why I selected this card. How do you feel about this first pick for this evening, Eric, this Snake Eyes rookie card?
Well, again, I think it's a no-brainer when you have a film that's coming out and is already being heavily hyped. We covered the first images that had come out, and then shortly after that, the first trailer came out. So there is some buzz around the movie, and that's only going to help, I think, anything else associated with Snake Eyes, especially some of the more vintage stuff, the sort of first appearances, those kinds of things, or significant appearances. I actually have a couple comics that I'm going to probably be talking about when the movie itself actually comes out that are in my personal collection that I think are going to be important Snake Eyes issues, especially if you are looking to do some speculative trading and that kind of a thing. But it's just, again, it's like a no-brainer. We know this movie's coming out. It's a done deal. It's a for sure thing. And whether it's good or not is almost irrelevant. It's going to have an impact.
And I agree with that. And then also, like, number two, like I said, the thing that's kind of fun about collecting these trading cards is, number one, they don't take up as much room as a comic book. So if you're looking for a fun thing to collect, they don't take up as much room. Even when you get them graded, they don't take up as much room as a graded comic. A graded comic takes up a good, a decent amount of room. Cause you know, well, I could grab one off the stand over there, but anyhow, you understand what I'm talking about. It's much larger. So even to get these graded, they don't take up as much room. They're kind of fun to display. They're fun to collect. So it's kind of a cool thing to do. And you know, sometimes with the comics, you get kind of priced out of the market. You know, all of a sudden you realize I can't afford this comic, even though I want to own it. And the thing to see about this is kind of cool. This is an early Snake Eyes card. You can get it relatively inexpensively. And it's just kind of a cool thing. You know, it's like being able to go out and get that G.I. Joe number one, maybe, or get that early Snake Eyes comic, but it's not going to cost you nearly what those are going to cost. And then over time, if the speculation of, you know, if Snake Eyes continues to be popular and talked about and, you know, relevant in pop culture, maybe you got some kind of need on your hands down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to work on switching out the next graphic because I've got another one for this evening here. We're going to go to this one. You know, it was my screen my computer didn't seem to struggle with the graphics as much. It's still kind of having some issues. All right. Okay. All right, let's get the control panel back up. Okay. All right. So here's going to be our next one for this evening. This is the second trading card pick for this evening. This is from 1990, again, the Impel Marvel Comics trading cards. And this is card number 39. This is She-Hulk. And again, same thing. As far as I can tell, I do believe this to be She-Hulk's rookie card. Now, I guess it kind of obviously makes sense to talk about She-Hulk because we know there's a Disney Plus show in production, in development for She-Hulk coming to Disney Plus. We are going to be seeing She-Hulk and more of She-Hulk in the MCU moving forward. We don't exactly know what their plans are. We don't exactly know what the tone or the look or the style of that show is actually going to be yet. But again, when you look at the 1990 Impel Marvel trading cards, they've been very popular with collectors. They've been very hot. A lot of these cards actually already have a percentage of value to them if they are PSA graded and they're at least a 9, you know, PSA 9, PSA 10. Those cards are fairly valuable. A PSA 9 or 10 of this card can be a little pricey. However, you can still get raw versions of this card if you shop around, if you keep an eye out on eBay and whatever. I mean, you can get a copy of this card, $10 to $15 raw, ungraded. They're out there. Now, you know, if you got to be careful with that too. Again, these trading cards, you got to look at those corners. You know, you got to make sure they're sharp and crisp. You know, they got to look like they could cut you. You know what I mean? And you want to make sure the card is obviously in good condition. But I, in my humble opinion, again, if She-Hulk is going to see a spike in popularity because of the Disney Plus show, I feel relatively confident recommending this card to people. Because when you look at the popularity, I mean, I think this 1990 Marvel Impel trading card line is going to go down as a classic trading card line. And I think these cards are going to continue to have value over time. And I feel like because of the Disney Plus show that this is a pretty safe bet. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I don't know. The one thing about She-Hulk is not as prominent a character as some of these other characters are. at least not in my mind. And that's basically because she's never had a really big television show or a movie. Like when we talk about Blade, Blade is kind of a sure bet in a way because he's already had a full set of movies. He's already very much in the mainstream public consciousness. I'm not saying She-Hulk really isn't, but she's definitely not to the same extent. I do have some concerns about the show itself. My understanding is it's supposed to be like a legal comedy. So I don't know exactly how that's going to work and what kind of effect that's actually going to have on this character. But at the same time, anytime you do have a television show coming out, it is fairly safe to assume that you're going to get that Marvel bump, right? I mean, that's just the way it works. And sometimes it happens in ways that we don't quite understand. So we'll see with She-Hulk. I mean, the biggest issue I have with She-Hulk personally is I just don't feel she has the same amount of sort of mainstream familiarity with people as some of these other characters do.
And I can see that. That's definitely a valid comment, and definitely something you want to keep in mind. And again, like I said, the thing I like about this card is you can get this card relatively inexpensively because She-Hulk hasn't real. The comic's already starting to track up, but you know, as far as you know, and it's crazy too because, for example, when you talk about She-Hulk, you know, She-Hulk number one from the 70s, you used to be able to get that book out of a quarter bin box, right? Like, no one really seemed to care about that She-Hulk book. And now graded copies of that book, they sell for a pretty penny. And it's all based off the speculation and the hype actually for the Disney Plus She-Hulk show. So this, again, like I said, the thing I like about this is if you're interested in the character or you already like the character and you're looking for something different to collect or you're interested to take your collection to a different avenue and you're interested to get into the trading cards, this is kind of a fun, you know, these are kind of cool, kind of fun starter cards, right? It's a fun place to start. But again, you want to get the raw version of this card and maybe get it graded because, like I said, I've seen some graded. The auctions completed have not been too super expensive, but I just kind of like this card. I really honestly think that this card, if the cards continue to experience a bump in popularity, and if the Disney Plus shows have the same kind of effect that the movies and stuff have, I just kind of feel like that maybe something could be happening with She-Hulk down the road.
Yeah, I think it's still a fairly safe bet. Again, because you just it's hard to go wrong when you know something's going to be coming out, as opposed to, you know, the rumor mill. We know that She-Hulk's going to be coming out.
Right, right. All right, so I'm going to get the second graphic up here. Well, actually, a third or a fourth graphic.
We do have a little shout out from the Rogues Gallery, Jane's in the
house. Okay, cool.
Said, "Hey, guys, I found you." Yes, we've changed formats. So, just to remind folks, you know, normally we used to do our show on Wednesdays. We did one show a week. Now we're doing two shows a week. So we do one show on Thursday, and that's at the 7 o'clock time slot. That's 7 o'clock Pacific time, 7 p.m. Pacific time. And then we're also doing a show on Sundays, and that one's going to be at noon Pacific time. But yeah, we have a format change. This is our second Thursday show since we started the format change.
Yeah, it's going much better than last time, but I don't think we have as many people watching. Irony of ironies, right?
Irony of ironies, right? It's always man. The way it is, right?
That last one was a mess. All right. So this is going to be our third and final selection for the trading cards for this evening. I think it makes sense why I'm recommending this card. I don't think anyone's terribly surprised. We've talked about my love of Moon Knight, how much I love Mark Spector, how much that I think this character is great. And I'm, you know, despite the fact that I haven't been thrilled with everything they've done with the Disney Plus shows, I am still very super excited for Moon Knight, and all the fun news. You know, we've been recommending Moon Knight comics here for people to check out from a collector's and a speculation standpoint. So this evening, we're going to recommend... Yeah,
the fanzine is still available too, right?
Yeah,
the fanzine is still available, the e-zine. So folks, consider that as well. You can still download that. That's a free e-zine, our fanzine. And that featured a Moonlight story quite prominently in that first inaugural issue.
Yeah, we recommended, in my mind anyway, recommended the key Moon Knight stories that you need to be up on, that you need to be familiar with. We actually broke all those stories down. You could even use that as a speculation guide of books to pick up, for example, because a lot of those books are tracking upwards. You know, there was a lot of, you know, and some of my favorite villains are recommended in that too, whether you want to talk about Werewolf by Night, whether you want to talk about the Hatchet Man. Moon Knight's got a lot of really interesting rogues gallery. And his rogues gallery is interesting too, because it's more in line with the same kind of rogues gallery that you see for Batman. You know, you have, you know, supernatural creatures, you know, you've got, you know, people who are kind of somewhat powered, but, you know, maybe they're more kind of just crazy insane. Like the Hatchet Man is basically a serial killer. And so it's just much more in line with Batman. And I'm really curious about this because I feel like that Moon Knight, if they do it right, you know, he really could become, you know, basically Marvel's Batman, which I think would be really kind of fun and awesome to kind of see that happen, you know? And I'm so super excited for that, probably more so than the Batman movie they're working on, to be honest with you. All right. So this is, again, it's our last card pick for this evening. This is from 1990. This, again, is from the MPAL Marvel trading cards. This is card number 26. This is Moon Knight. And as far as I could tell, I'm going to say that this is his rookie card. There is a card that predates this one that was, again, part of a different set. And it actually featured the Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu cover on it. I actually own that card as well. But again, just like what I said with Snake Eyes at the beginning of this show, I feel like that's kind of more like a first appearance on a trading card. I really feel like this is really Moon Knight's rookie card. You've got a profile picture of him on the back. You've got some stats. You've got a bio. And it's just more a rookie card in terms of what we think of a rookie card being when you think about, again, a baseball card, a basketball card, a football card, a hockey card, right? So that's why I'm saying that based off my research, my personal professional opinion, I really feel like that this card, number 26, Moon Knight, this is Moon Knight's rookie card. So how do you feel about this, our last selection for tonight's show, Eric?
I feel like this is the true wild card of the bunch, including the comic books, because Moon Knight is one of those characters that a lot of people are not familiar with. I only even know about the character because of what Dave has told me about the character. I didn't even know anything about this character. Never read a comic book that he was in. And as far as I know, he hasn't really appeared in any of the cartoons or the live action shows or movies. So this is, to me, the true wild card of the bunch, because I think what's really, really going to be critical to anything Moon Knight is the show. And if the show is a hit or not, if people really like the character and it really resonates with people, it could go through the stratosphere. It could be anybody's guess. But if the show bombs, this stuff is not going to be very sought after. I mean, I just don't think it will be. Although there is certainly something to be said about any of the Marvel Impel cards, the original Marvel Impel cards, because we know that there's been quite a lot of speculation on those cards, regardless of the characters, right? It doesn't really matter. But anytime you have that little Marvel bump, we know this show is happening. It's not just rumor. It is confirmed. We know that there's going to be some sort of Marvel bump, at least initially. The question is going to be, is this going to be like an investment pick, or is this going to be a speculative pick where you're just going to flip it and try to take advantage of the TV show as best you can, right? That's really what it comes down to, because we don't know that yet. We don't know what kind of impact Moon Knight is going to have on the mainstream audience once it's actually on Disney Plus.
That's true. That's very true. And the thing about the trading cards too, and one of these days, whenever we get back to doing the contests again, we do have a lot of Marvel Impel cards to be giving out to folks whenever we get back to that. But I am, I guess the thing with me is that, again, like I said, the thing I like about the Marvel Impel cards is, number one, I think they are going to be highly sought after and valued, you know, from this point on, number one. Number two, like I said, for the Moon Knight comics, like, for example, we talked about on last week's show, we talked about how basically Sun King, some people are already speculating that Sun King is actually the villain for the Disney Plus Moon Knight show, for example, just based off what Ethan Hawke is wearing. There's been set photos. That book has already gone up like was selling for $40 at the time that we were talking about it on the show. So I actually recommended the Lenticular Special Edition version of it because I thought, well, you can still get this one for $10 if you shop around, you know, and it's got the a recreation of the classic Bill Sienkiewicz cover. It's just like a fun way to get into that play. But this, the thing that's really cool about it is you can get this Moon Knight card super, super affordably, super inexpensive. It's part of, again, what I think is going to become over time this seminal Marvel trading card line, which is the 1990 Marvel Empal line. And also, you've got the potential that if the cards continue to, catch and pique people's interest, this is kind of a fun way people could get into the collecting hobby and collect the characters without having to go, you know, waist deep into trying to pick up all these comic books. You know, when you're talking about collecting all the Moon Knight trading cards, there's been quite a few of them, but it's not anything like trying to collect all the Moon Knight comic books or even all the Moon Knight key comic books. You know, you have for Moon Knight, this is going to be one of the most important cards for Moon Knight. You can go on eBay right now and get this for $3 or less. So, you know, again, raw, ungraded. Okay. So if you want to get into that, if you want to collect the Marvel characters, that's the thing I like about the cards. It's a fun way to get into that play and kind of speculate. You know, you get a copy or two of the cards, you send them in, you get them graded. Yeah, maybe you get one that comes back graded pretty high. You hold on to it down the road and, you know, maybe you got something. I don't know. You have to make that decision for yourself. We always say that when it comes to, you know, speculating, investing, whatever, how you want to look at it, you can't spend money you're not prepared to lose.
Right.
But the thing that's nice about this, again, if you shop around, you could actually get every card I've recommended this evening for basically that $20 or less. Every single one that I've recommended. And then if you get decent quality cards, you get them graded, maybe you got some kind of cool down the road. So it's up to you to make that determination. So all I'm doing is give you my personal recommendations. If I was looking to collect the 1990 Impel Marvel trading cards, if I want to get raw cards to possibly get graded, this is the way I'm approaching it. I'm trying to figure out who's got a rookie card, who's got a first appearance card, and that's how we're kind of play these recommendations here on the Collector's Corner moving forward on the Retro Rogues Live.
Yeah, very, very cool. I think these are all good, solid picks. And you can go either way. You know, you have to kind of decide for yourself out there if you're trying to make that quick flip, if you're into that speculative market, or if you are looking to do sort of an investment and hoping that these things are going to retain, or gain value over time. That's always kind of the name of the game when it comes to collecting.
All right. So now that we're done with talking about the trading cards, and our kind of our comic book picks. I don't think we need to recap it too heavy, but again, for those of you interested who may be coming into this a little bit late, our comic book recommendations on the top of the show were actually Morbius number one from 1992. I'm trying to get back to the little branding graphics. So Morbius number one from 1992 is one of the comic book recommendations. The other one, again, is Night Stalkers number one from 1992. If you're curious why I'm recommending those, rewatch the show after the live broadcast finishes, and you can see that. We recommended the Snake Eyes 1991 Impel trading card. We recommended 1990, the Impel Marvel She-Hulk trading card as her rookie card. And our last recommendation, of course, was from 1990, Impel Marvel 26, Moon Knight's basically rookie card. All right, so if that's good, let's go ahead and segue over into maybe doing pop culture news.
Hey, my Collector's Corner stuff, Dave.
Oh, I am so sorry.
All right, so that is my bad. I like to focus on is action figures. That's kind of my thing. Currently, I'm actually collecting the Marvel Legends Kenner line, and I became aware of a really interesting debate that's going on in the collector community right now, which is about the empty pegs in the stores. That Junk Man recently did an interesting video on it. I know Retro Blasting has also done a video on it. I'm sure other collecting sites have done videos on this phenomenon of the empty pegs at the store. Specifically, we're talking about Toys R Us, and we're talking about Walmart. We're talking about the American, the market in the United States. It is different, very different internationally. But, you know, in the wake of losing Toys R Us, there's been a lot of speculation out there about what's going on. Why is it so hard to find these exclusives? Because Target and Walmart both constantly have these exclusive toys that come out, and it seems like they're always impossible to find, and just a total pain to collect, especially as an adult collector, and if you're trying to be a completist, right? So one of the things that has come up is that Junkman did an interview with a gentleman that goes by Spectre Creative. And what Spectre Creative does is he's actually a consultant, because he has actually worked in the toy industry, unlike a lot of these other commentators that you'll find that are strictly collectors. This is someone who's actually worked in the industry, specifically has worked for Mattel and I believe some other companies. I think he actually worked for DC Direct and some other different companies during his time. And now what he does is he consults. He consults for people who actually want to bring their toys to market. He actually tries to help them do that. And in the midst of COVID, he had lost a lot of business, so he started doing his own YouTube show. And recently, just this last weekend, he did a really great episode with that Junkman, where they had some fantastic questions. And it relates directly to my experience that was just this Monday. And I had just watched the episode on Sunday, the day before, and I just thought this was so funny. So I've got proof of this. One of the things that they were talking about is that Spectre Creative was talking about the 8-week turnaround that Target has. In other words, every single peg is supposed to give you a supply of 8 weeks worth of product. That's what every single peg represents in the action figure aisle at Target. We're specifically talking about Target. Now that's where I shop. I shop at Target. I usually go there every Monday to buy my groceries, and I always go over and I check out the toys. A lot of times I'll check out the movie section, but I usually check out the action figure aisle, and I usually check out like the game section and those kinds of things, right? And I had this really funny experience, and I thought this was really interesting about this whole 8-week window. So I've got these receipts. I've got actual like proof of this, and I want to make sure that I can show the dates on these things. So this is the first time, and I did this on a previous episode of the Retro Rogues Live. I actually showed some pickups that I did. And this is the receipt from that previous episode, okay? So as you can see, this is from March 29th of 2021, okay? That's from the first time that I was showing these pickups that I did. Now, I just did some new pickups this Monday, and of course, you know, you know what the date is already for Monday, but I just want to show the receipt. 5/17/2021, exactly 8 weeks apart. Exactly 8 weeks apart. And it's funny because I go every single Monday. I could never find these Marvel Legend figures, but there they were. There they were. And I want to show the purchases that I made. So first of all, we've got Electro here. So this is one of the purchases that I was able to make this Monday from the what happened there? Here we go. This is one of the purchases I was able to make on Monday of Electro. And it is interesting to note. Remember, these are Target exclusives. I believe it's they do have these available on their online store as well. But the card backs, I believe, are different if you order them directly from the website. So these are Target exclusives. And again, they've been very difficult to find. One of the things I really like about these, besides just the general retro style, which is what I grew up with. And it kind of feels like you have, you know, with the Kenner, you know, logo and everything, it kind of feels like you finally have, you know, Marvel versions of those classic Star Wars figures. That's what it feels like to me when you get these things. But one thing that's really nice is the price point. These are only $9.99. They're $10, which means that they are cheaper than the Star Wars retro line, which is like $12.99. Which I think is really interesting, especially since it's the same company making them. I'm not quite sure why that is, but these are cheaper.
The thing that's really great too is that's like classic Electro, which is awesome.
And that's what's really nice about the line. These are comic centric versions of the characters, which I think is really, really cool. This is one I was really happy to pick up because I had ignored this the first time I saw one of these figures, and I was not aware of the line at all. And I even talked about it on the show. I saw this Daredevil, and it was by itself. And I was sitting there thinking, like, are these things going to go up? Are they not? Are they worth collecting? And I decided not to pick it up. And of course, the next time I went to Target, it was gone. And I was so happy to actually come across one of these Daredevils because I think it's a really great looking figure. So I was really happy to come across that because I had come across one before and I didn't pick it up. This, of course, classic character, Iron Man. I think this is definitely one. If you're kind of into the speculative market, I think this is one of those that's sure to go up in value because Iron Man is such a popular character. And of course, this is his very classic, comic book look. I love the card backs as well. I love the artwork that they do on these. Just overall, these are really great if you're into the classic versions of the Marvel characters. And also, they're smaller than a lot of like the other Marvel Legend lines. And again, much cheaper than a lot of this other stuff. A lot of this other stuff is pretty expensive. This is one that I probably would look at as trying to like maybe flip because I do not have a lot of connection to the Elektra character, but I do like the way she looks. And I should note also, this is one of the few figures in this line that comes with accessories, which I think some people might be saying, well, maybe that's one of the reasons they're cheaper. But like Captain America and, as you can see here with Elektra, they do come with accessories and they're still at the same price point. It's not like they're more expensive or anything like that. But I do love the look of this figure. I think the look of this figure, I've always liked her look. I just don't have a lot of like emotional attachment to the character. So this is one that I probably would look at the possibility of like maybe flipping, down the road, see maybe if I could, get a few extra bucks for it. At the Target I went to, it was a little disappointing. They didn't have duplicates of anything. So basically, I could only get what they had, and I basically took everything that they had left. I was that guy. Yes, I was that guy, and I took everything they had left. That's all they had. This is literally all they had when I went there. But this is one I've been really looking forward to. Iceman. I do have a Spider-Man that actually I ended up giving to one of my kids because they wanted it, and so at least it's still within the family. But I really was looking forward to Iceman because my introduction to the Marvel Universe is from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. That was really the first Marvel thing that I got into, and of course the main stars of that show were Spider-Man, Iceman, and Firestar. I would love if they did a Firestar in this line. I don't think they will. But I do love this look because that's exactly the way he looked in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So I do have like a huge sort of like, emotional attachment to this. This is one that I would keep, in my personal collection and try to display and all that kind of stuff, because that's really how I got into Marvel in the first place, was due to Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So I do have my fingers crossed for the possibility that they might do a Firestar. I haven't heard any buzz about that. I know there are other people that would really like to see that happen, but at this point, I can't report that's even a rumor right now. David Moss is in the house, and he says, "Nice finds. I guess I'm hitting Target tomorrow." And David, keep in mind that probably the best strategy I think is exactly what I did: is you kind of pick a day. I was going every Monday, and you just keep going. You know what I mean? And you try to figure out the best you can when it is that your Target actually gets these things, because that 8-week window that Spectre Creative talked about, I showed you the receipts. It's true. It's 100% true. Because like I said, I go in every Monday for the last 8 weeks, there's been nothing, but there was at the beginning and there was at the end, and they go fast. They go really, really fast. People go in there and they're like me and they take them all, So that's kind of the unfortunate thing as well. It's just the way it is. These are highly collectible. They're highly coveted, but I am hearing a lot of buzz that people are finding these more and more in the wild, that they are sort of catching up, that they're catching up a little bit to the demand of these products. But I can't say enough good things about them because I just love the way they look and I love the price point. These are basically the cheapest new action figures you can get at retail right now. There's no other line that comes close in that regard. And David, also comments, I guess I need to get there before you. That's exactly right. That was another discussion they were having, is the scalpers, right? There's a lot of people that go in and they do buy everything because my understanding is most of these retail stores do not have buying limits because they have so little of the product. It doesn't make any sense to have a buying limit.
Well, that's interesting. I was just about to ask, because when you saw that you were showing off, they had Iceman, and I knew you had purchased Spider-Man before. I was wondering, it's like, do they have a Starfire? Like, is that like a Is that like a thing? Like,
I wish they did, and I wish I could say that they'd announced one, but as far as I know, they have not yet. But man, this Iceman is just perfect in my mind. It's the kind of figure that I wanted as a kid that they never had. They never had official Spider-Man and his amazing friends action figures when the show was on. I know Toys R Us actually did do a Toys R Us exclusive. I remember seeing that, you know, in the wild at a Toys R Us. They actually did do a Spider-Man and his amazing friends official tie-in with all three characters. But I haven't seen that since, and I haven't seen like a new version of that. But I do think that these Marvel Legend figures do fill that need quite well. They do fit that space very well if you never had those. And you know, a lot of these figures, let's just face it, unless you were into the the Secret Wars line, growing up in the 80s, there really were not a lot of options because Mego was gone. You know, depending on depending on how old you were. Like by the time I was kind of getting into toys and, you know, action figures, Mego was really not around anymore. So superhero action figures were kind of difficult to find. There was the DC had the Superpowers line that was really awesome. They had a lot of great figures in that line. But then with Marvel, pretty much it was the Secret Wars line, which a lot of people thought were a little bit cheesy because they had those weird shields that they came with. And I know a lot of people really didn't actually like those. So.
Well, and I personally loved the Secret Wars line when I was a kid. My big complaint with the weird shield was the shields was the fact that Captain America didn't come with a regular shield.
This line does. I did get the Captain America, and I gave that to one of my other kids that wanted that. So, but yeah, Captain America actually in this line does come with the shield.
And I was going to clarify, too. I meant Firestar. I don't know why in the world I said Starfire. I meant Firestar. You know, it's so weird because it's like when you have these conversations with friends like on a convention floor or a comic book store or whatever, I don't make these kind of like flubs. But we get here on the show live and I'm calling people by the wrong thing. It's really annoying. And my apologies. I meant Firestar.
I think that's a pretty common thing that people do sometimes.
It's just
they
weird.
Mess that up.
I would love to have a Spider-Man, an Iceman, and a Firestar. I think that would be really, really cool. Now I know the regular Marvel Legends line, they did at some point release a Firestar, and she actually came with Miss Lyon, so the little dog. They did that quite some time ago. But I personally like the look of this a lot better. Like I love the classic, you know, kind of packaging, you know, with the classic look of the characters, like on the blister packaging art and everything. Like it just, you know, it was weird because, well, not weird, but I used to describe to people, you know, when they would see like my action figure collections and stuff, and my action figure collecting has definitely pared down a lot from where it was many years ago. And I sold a lot of those actually, ironically, not on eBay, but just at yard sales. I'll have yard sales at my house and I'll, you know, tell people about them on Facebook and people will be, can I get that? Can I get that? And it's like, no, somebody just bought it. You know, it's like, it's 50 cents. You just got to show up at my house and get it, you know? But anyhow, I used to have a lot more action figures and people used to ask me about it because they just couldn't understand sometimes my fascination. And for me, I feel like the packaging is part of the whole thing. Like the presentation of the whole thing is what, in my mind, makes it like a true pop art kind of collectible. Like if you want to think about pop art as a movement, whether you want to think of pop art as a thing, I always felt like that when you've got that action figure, right, in the packaging with the blister card art and the whole thing, to me, it's a pop art artifact. That's how I always have thought of them. And they really also do represent a moment in time. One of the few things I do still own, because I don't think I'll ever get rid of it, is I do still own my when they did the remember they were doing the X-Men action figures back in the 90s?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Toy Biz did that Marvel Superheroes line. I kept my Captain America. I still have that one. Because I just loved it. But he's in the packaging and everything. And I just always thought he was really cool. And that's one of the few ones I've actually held on to. Because, again, there wasn't a lot of really great Captain America action figures that actually came with his shield. And that was the thing I loved about that Toy Biz one is he actually finally came with a shield, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool that they're doing this. It's kind of cool, especially for kids, like, you know, not just collectors, but also for kids too. Like, you know, it's got a great price point, you know, and it's the classic version of the characters from the comics. But it also, the thing that's neat too about what Marvel's done over time is it also kind of matches up enough with the movies that they be, oh, this is Captain America. Like, you can see it. Oh, this is Spider-Man. You know, and then if their parent is into it, they could be like, oh, well, this is the way you looked in the comic books. This is how you looked in. Oh, that's cool. Do you have, yeah, I've got here. You can read this. You know, like, it might encourage kids to go check out and actually read the comics too, which I think is fun. You know, I just love the whole, you know, the whole thing, you know, and I just think it's really kind of cool that the toys look so much like the classic versions of the characters.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely like the classic look. I think that's the best in general. Ronnie mentions, he says, oh man, Hasbro has taken so much of my money. And I'm sure it has. It's taken a lot of mine as well. David Motz mentions, it looks like they have some of these retros available on Hasbro Plus. That is correct. My understanding is the card backs are different. And the Hasbro Pulse line, they come in two packs. And actually, that's kind of neat too, because the two packs are actually boxes and they actually have artwork on them and all that kind of stuff as well. So the presentation is completely different. Personally, I don't really like stuff in boxes. Like, I actually showed one time on the air that I have the Stan Lee Spider-Man that was an exclusive from San Diego Comic-Con. I can't do anything with them because it's sealed and it's got like an official seal on it. So I can't even look at it. I can't even really display it. It's basically become a 100% investment piece. It has no other collectability for me at all because I can't even display the thing. You know, display the box, really? No, I don't think so. And of course, that gets back to the eternal debate of whether you actually open your toys or not and how you want to display them. I think that some of the open displays are really awesome. Like, I'll see some of these other YouTubers that have these huge display cases, and I'm just like, I would love to be able to do that, but I just don't have the space. My place is too small. Ronnie also mentions, he says, they've gotten to the point where they are posable statues. I still have my U.S. agent as well that you gave me, and I'm sure he's referring to you, Dave, that you gave him a U.S. agent. I think posability is an interesting thing because, like, for instance, with these figures, these basically have the same articulation as those classic Kenner Star Wars figures, and I kind of like that. I really I'm not big on posability, and I think I'm in a very small minority of people that are like that. And you know, I did grow up with the G.I. Joes that were much more posable than, you know, the Star Wars figures, but there's something about the presentation that I like about that classic just Star Wars figures with basically only 5 points of articulation. There's something charming about it to me. There's something I really like about it. I don't see people really using all that posability that much anyway, because a lot of that posability, it doesn't really work unless you have the character on a stand anyway, because they end up falling over, right? So it's like, what exactly is the point? Well, I'm just one of those guys that I'm not that much into articulation, even though it seems like every other adult collector is.
Well, I'm just going to say, I know Ronnie, my brother, he'll send me sometimes pictures of these epic scenes that he creates with his posable action figures. So
some like people dioramas.
He puts together these whole epic scenes. I remember at one point he had like all these like stormtroopers and AT-AT Walker and like all this crazy stuff. And he would send me these really crazy, like epic things, you know, where it's, you know, Batman fighting a bunch of clone troopers, or you know, it's, you know, Iron Fist, you know, fighting, you know, Scorpion and Sub-Zero at the same time. Like, he would always send me all these crazy fun pictures of these scenes that he would, you know, pose out. So I could definitely appreciate it from the posability standpoint. You know, and I've shown off before, actually, my, you know, prototype Boba Fett, you know, the one that's in the white, you know, armor. You know, that was a gift from my brother, actually. And, you know, that one, he's always posed somewhere in the studio. And, you know, at some point, Eric, you're going to have to come out here and visit me here at my house here in Retro Rogues. What is this? North? I don't know what the heck this would be considered. But if you come out here, because it's like, you know, I do have a lot of this stuff on display. You can't see much of it, you know, at the moment because of my Retro Rogues mood lighting, as it were. But, you know, I've got a lot of kind of fun things I like to display. So I'm one of those people. I like the posability. But again, like I said, the thing I like about those figures that we're showing is I like the whole presentation of it, like the way that it's all put together. You're talking about the Stan Lee action figure, for example, they released many years ago. The thing I actually like about the mine still in the box, too, but the reason mine still is in the box is because Mike Norton actually did the artwork of Spider Stan Lee that's actually on the outside of the box. He actually did the artwork for that. And I think that's kind of cool. So Mike Norton was actually a member of the Mid-South Cartoonist Association back when I was a member. I haven't seen Mike in quite a few years since I've gone off the convention circuit. I still consider Mike a friend. And one of the reasons I love that Stan Lee action figure is not only the connection to Stan Lee, but also the fact that my friend Mike Norton actually did the artwork on it. I think it's really cool.
No, that is cool. That is very cool. And Ronnie also mentions that he says, oh, I opened them, and my Storm Collectibles Mortal Kombat shelf is pure carnage. So I do appreciate that. I do appreciate people that open them and are able to put them on these really nice displays. But one of the nice things about these card backs that I like so much is that they are very easy to just put a tack up and you can display it on the wall and you're done. That's it. You know? So
yeah.
You don't have to do anything more than that. That's one of the things I do like about it. But it's the eternal debate. The eternal debate. Should you open them or not?
That's true. It's a debate I think that will be going on for a very, very long time. I sometimes wonder if there will ever be like, well, I know it's for some people, you know, they kind of have settled that debate, you know. You know, along those same lines, talking about debating things. I wonder if we should go ahead and segue over into pop culture.
Yep, that sounds good to me.
And let the debates, the many, many fan debates continue. All right, so do you want to go first with pop culture, or do you want me to go first?
My pop culture news I think it's pretty topical, so I'll go ahead and share mine real quick because I don't have a whole lot of insight on my pop culture news story. I just feel like it's sort of breaking news that people are talking about and is worth mentioning. So for any of you Star Wars fans out there, this story comes from Fanthatrax. I like that, Fanthatrax. I like Fanthatrax. And a very simple title, Dave Filoni has been promoted to executive creative director at Lucasfilm. Says congratulations are due to Dave Filoni, promoted to his new role of executive creative director at Lucasfilm, joining John Knoll and Doug Chung, and I'm sorry if I mispronounced that, in the position. The specifics of the role are unclear, but it would appear that the man behind the Clone Wars, Rebels, Resistance, The Bad Batch, The Mandalorian, The Book of Boba Fett, and other treasures as yet unrevealed will be overseeing the creative side of the Star Wars saga. So the bottom line is what this actually means is very difficult to know at this point. You always have the people that, you know, come out and they're like, all right, Kennedy's out. This is it, right? She's done. New regime, right? We finally did it. You know, she's gone. I wouldn't put too much into this. Obviously he is being promoted. He has been promoted, but he's been promoted to a position where he's equal to other people. He's not, you know, he's not above Kennedy, for instance, or equal to her. He's still below her. So you have to take it with a little bit of grain of salt, but this is definitely something that's newsworthy. A lot of people are talking about it and wondering what this does mean for the future of Star Wars. At this point, I think what it really just means is that they're giving Dave a big pat on the back for The Mandalorian. I think that's really what it comes down to, as they're saying, hey, you were integral to this. You know, this is a huge thing for Star Wars. Let's give him a promotion and let's promote him somewhere where he's not necessarily going to be in charge, where he's going to have to deal with other people that are essentially the same rank as him. But it is a promotion.
Well, I was going to say, I know that a lot of Star Wars fans had been hoping that eventually Star Wars would have like its own version of Kevin Feige, you know, like someone who can kind of shepherd the interconnectivity of all the different, you know, projects. And kind of, because that's what Kevin Feige does over at Marvel. You know, he is at the end of the day the ultimate person who makes a lot of those decisions, and
right.
he's the keeper of the sort of like the tapestry of the MCU, as it were, right? And so I know a lot of people have been hoping for something like that specifically for Star Wars, you know, with Lucasfilm. And along those same lines, too, that was what I'd always heard Geoff Johns' role over at DC was supposed to be when he was actually, I think, chief creative director. It was a similar kind of sounding, you know, kind of title, right? So I had a feeling that it, based on this, I have a feeling that maybe that's kind of what Filoni is going to be doing. I mean, we won't know the specifics until more information comes out, but I wonder if that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to take someone and put them in that position so they can kind of help better map out where they're kind of going, you know, long term. But only time will tell. But this is cool. I've liked a lot of the stuff that Dave Filoni's done. Like, I enjoyed the Clone Wars. I love the Mandalorian. Mandalorian was a lot of fun. I haven't had a chance to check out anything from the Bad Batch yet, just because I've got too much going on at the moment and a lot of things occupying my mind. Hopefully we'll have some kind of fun news, you know, about different things here as time goes on. But this sounds cool, and I feel like it's definitely well deserved. You know, what he and Jon Favreau did with The Mandalorian was amazing and kind of reinvigorated my love actually for Star Wars. So yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that this is a reward for that. There's no doubt about that in my mind. And Ronnie says he's seen The Bad Batch and it's really good.
I've heard that from a couple of different people that The Bad Batch is quite enjoyable. And I, like I said, I'm just behind on it just because between the format change and everything going on, I've not been doing a very good job of keeping up with everything. So I'm behind on watching Bad Batch. So, all right. Very cool. Are we good for me to go ahead and,
Yes, absolutely.
All right, very cool. All right, so this is essentially one kind of one pop culture news story, but it wears a lot of hats. We'll say that. It's a pop culture news story that wears a lot of hats. Okay, so it's coming from The Hollywood Reporter. This actually broke on the 19th, which was yesterday. A lot of people have already talked about this, but I kind of have some thoughts, and they're not all positive. All right, so basically read the headline right here. We're going to get into this story a little bit, but we're not going to do the whole thing. I always encourage everyone, if you're curious to learn more, search out this article and read the whole thing for yourself. Okay, so it's over The Hollywood Reporter. This was in their Heat Vision, which is sort of like a I was thinking it was kind of like a blog, even though maybe it's not really necessarily a blog because they're definitely breaking news, right? But this is a Batman animated series from J.J. Abrams and Matt Reeves coming to HBO Max. Okay. So this is by James Hibbard. Apologies if I'm saying your name incorrectly. This is the powerhouse directors joined DC Animated Universe veteran Bruce Timm for a reimagining of Caped Crusader that returns to the character's noir roots. So it says here, the powerhouse directors, along with DC Animated Universe veteran Bruce Timm, have received a straight-to-series order for Batman, Caped Crusader, from HBO Max and Cartoon Network. The series billed as a reimagining of the Batman mythology. We are beyond excited to be working together to bring this character back to tell engrossing new stories in Gotham City, said Abrams. And then he's, of course, they got a little credit for him for Force Awakens. And Reeves, Matt Reeves, in a statement. The series will be thrilling, cinematic, and evocative of Batman's noir roots while diving deeper into the psychology of these iconic characters. We cannot wait to share this new world. Okay, so let's see. They got a kind of fun piece of art. So let's pull the fun little piece of art they've got. Okay, so let's talk about this. All right. How do I do this without it turning into a rant? All right. This art looks great. And within general, I would give Bruce Timm all the leeway in the world to do whatever in the hell it is that he wants to do with Batman. He has earned that. Okay. His direct VOD Batman Harley Quinn film, it was okay. I kind of liked it. I wasn't like a huge fan, but I do own it. The Batman Killing Joke was a weird mix of things that I still don't feel comfortable about to this day. But I will allow Bruce Timm to do whatever he wants to do with Batman because he's earned it. Okay. Now, one of the things that made Batman the Animated Series when it came out in the 90s such a really cool, awesome production was the fact that basically Tim Burton didn't care what the Animated Series team did. That was kind of the interesting thing that's kind of come out now. Because originally when they were putting this together, they were thinking that it needed to line up with the 89 Batman movie, because that's why the Animated Series was moving forward, is because, you know, the 89 movie. So they got the movie, let's do an animated series, right? And so when you delve into the origins of Batman the Animated Series, they talk about the fact that they wanted Batman the Animated Series to basically kind of go along with Tim Burton's 89 Batman movie, right? Well, Tim Burton didn't care what in the hell they did. His name was on it. You know, he kind of had to sign off on some stuff. But for the most part, Tim Burton didn't care what they did. So they were able to create basically Batman the Animated Series without a lot of hands telling them what to do. Okay. Which is amazing, because I think that's why we got such an amazing version of Batman the Animated Series. You know, Tim Burton probably had some to say in it, but the thing of it is that they didn't feel beholden to have it line up with that particular, with the movie version. That's what made, you know, that really great in my mind, right? Here's kind of my concerns with this, and I hope I'm totally wrong, okay? This may be a great animated series, and I love Batman, and I will watch it. I've watched every version of Batman animated, anything that's ever come out, including Beware the Batman, which was kind of weird. Beware the Batman was really strange. But my concerns are this, and we're going to go back up to the headline now, because here's where we have to talk about the important thing. There's this name right here. See this name I'm circling? This J.J. Abrams name? This is what has me concerned. It honestly has me very concerned. I used to trust J.J. Abrams to do a lot of stuff, okay? But as I've said before on this show, I have a concern, and I don't understand why. Do we have to give J.J. Abrams every franchise in the world? Like, do we just have to do that? Like I said before, like, I couldn't understand. I mean, he did start. They gave him the keys to Star Trek. Then they gave him the keys to Star Wars. And now they go, oh, here's a Batman animated series. And he's also doing a Superman series too. I'm not going to bring up the article about the Superman series, but he's doing the Superman series too. And I hope they're good. And I'm curious to watch them. I'm more excited for the Batman one because I am more a Batman fan. But I just don't understand this. And then it gets even weirder. We got Matt Reeves and J.J. Abrams. Could we just have one of them in charge? We have to have both of them in charge? Like, I could understand Matt Reeves overseeing it because he's doing the Robert Pattinson Batman movie. And it'd be like what happened with the 89 movie. The 89 movie was popular. We want to have an animated series so people can watch Batman show. Let's have Tim Burton involved. Let's bring this creative team on to create the animated series. And Tim Burton said, "Ah, you guys do whatever you want to do. You guys know animation. You do you." And they created a legendary series that is standing the test of time as a classic. Okay. But this is weird to me. We got Matt Reeves and J.J. Abrams involved. Whose vision of Batman is this going to be? I guess at the end of the day, I don't understand why J.J. Abrams is involved in this. Other than the fact that he doesn't get enough pieces of franchises. Like, he's going to get a piece of Batman now, too? Just, like, why? Like, technically, Bruce Timm could produce this series without any of them involved. So, I don't understand what's happening here. I mean, what do you think about this, Eric? I mean, am I overreacting to nothing? Or am I maybe bringing up a legitimate concern?
I like David Mott's comment. He says he loves the art, but I'm not sure about the ears. That's a really great way of putting it, David Mott's, because I agree with you. I always say that Bruce Timm and Alex Ross are my favorite comic book artists. I love super cartoony and I love ultra realistic. I'm a man of extremes in regards to the art that I like. And those are my two favorites. Bottom line, I respect them immensely as artists, but I don't think that makes them perfect. And I saw flaws in the Batman animated series even though it was happening. Unlike a lot of you probably, I was not a big fan of Batman Beyond, for instance. And I felt a lot of the redesigns that were done on Batman were bad, just bad, because the original designs were perfect. The only one I think I ended up liking was I did think Scarecrow was the new design of Scarecrow was pretty good, because that one was much more it was a much scarier version of Scarecrow than the original one in the first couple seasons of the Batman animated series. But you know, what it really comes down to is the story, right? No matter how good the artwork is, it's the story that matters. And I don't trust J.J. Abrams to do anything. I think he's a hack. I think he sucks. And I don't want anything to do with anything he touches. And I feel he's just going to ruin this. You know, just because it might have great artwork, if the stories suck, that's not really going to help. That's why the Batman animated series is so legendary. To me, Batman, the Batman animated series is a definitive version of Batman and all the major characters of the Joker, of everybody, Mr. Freeze, you know, Batgirl, Commissioner Gordon. Commissioner Gordon's awesome. Alfred's awesome, you know. Robin's awesome, you know. The both versions, Dick Grayson and the Tim Drake version as well.
Right.
So I feel like why mess with perfection? You know what I mean? Why do this? Why screw up your legacy? Oh, I know why. Paycheck. So that's where I'm at. I'm completely cynical on this. I don't have anything good to say about it. I probably won't watch it, quite frankly. Me personally, I just don't trust JJ to touch anything. I just don't, and I don't want to support him.
Well, so. And here's the thing. I love Batman, so I will check this out, and I hope it's good. And like I said, I would trust Bruce Timm to do anything with Batman that he wants to do. I would totally trust him to do that. But in this particular instance, I just don't understand why we have to have J.J. Abrams and Matt Reeves involved. To me, it makes sense for Matt Reeves to be involved. Matt Reeves is developing that Gotham, the police. It's weird because we already had a Gotham show, but I know they're developing an HBO Max show that goes along with
the Batman. It's like a GPD show. Yeah. It's like a
yeah, exactly. Show. They're developing a show that kind of goes along with the Pattinson movie. So it makes sense if Reeves is involved in this Batman Caped Crusader, you know what I mean? So that they're kind of simpatico or they're in line enough that it's not terribly confusing, you know, and you know that you're, you know.
Since when does Warner Brothers care about that? I mean, the branding of Warner Brothers television shows is so damn confusing. Gotham is a great example of that. You know, right. You got this Arrowverse, then you got Gotham, and then you also have the Snyderverse, all happened at the same time. And I'm telling you, of course, casual fans were confused as hell about what the hell was going on, especially if they were interested in all the different variations. They're like, what the hell is this? Why is there a different version of Flash in this thing? And then, you know what I mean? I'm sure a lot of casual fans were very confused about what was going on. So I don't see how this is suddenly like an issue where they got to line up the movie with the cartoon. They never do that. They never have done that.
I know, but all I'm saying is if they wanted to do that, it makes sense.
It's never happened.
Right. But all I'm saying is if they wanted to do that, it makes sense to have Matt Reeves involved. That's all I'm saying. But I don't understand why in the hell J.J. Abrams, you know, J.J. Abrams does not have a history in animation that I'm aware of, right? You know, some of his movies have used enough CGI that maybe they are animated. It's up for debate. But, you know, the point I'm making is that I don't understand why J.J. Abrams is involved. And, I feel like that J.J. Abrams has been giving too many opportunities to kind of tinker with too many things. You know, it's that, you know, how many toys in the toolbox do you really need to play with? You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
You've already had Star Trek. You've already had Star Wars. Can you just leave Batman alone?
How about leave him alone? Do something on your own and do something new. If you're such a great creative and you're so wonderful. How about you frickin' do your own thing and make something new? Come on, Hollywood. You have so much faith in this guy. Let him try something new, and let's watch him fall flat on his face. But he's got to be a hack on everything and use everybody else's brand to enhance his own name. And somehow Hollywood just totally agrees with this. They just totally agree with it. They've got no issues with it. And, you know, David yeah, Mott says, he agrees with you, Dave. We do not need JJ. He goes on to say JJ has enough money and he should retire. Give someone else a chance.
Totally. See, that's kind of my thing. It's like, I mean, let Bruce Timm be the executive producer. And if he doesn't necessarily want to be there day to day, get some up and coming guy to, give us his version of Batman, someone who wants to be in the animation industry, maybe who's influenced by Bruce Timm's work, or maybe even someone who's, maybe inspired by, some of the superhero anime productions.
How about somebody who has a fresh take and isn't just going to be derivative and basically ruin the legacy of something that's wonderful? Yeah. This is going to probably end up being the Picard of Batman. You know what I mean? Where I'm literally going to start hating to watch the original series now, the original animated series, because of this crap. That's how I feel about it, because this has happened so many times with so many times that when they do their reimaginings, oh man, that word terrifies me now, because I feel like what they're just doing is destroying their own brand, and they just constantly do it.
Yeah, I just have some concerns, because to me, I just honestly don't feel like that we need to have JJ involved in this. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't understand. Well,
I agree with David Motz. He says, let's put you in charge, Dave. And I say that with no sarcasm or anything, because I think Dave Beatty would be a much better choice to be doing this reimagining than even Bruce Timm, quite frankly. That's my personal opinion.
I was talking about those epic scenes that my brother does with his action figures. and Ronnie actually sent me this one.
That's cool. And that's tough for our listeners, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well,
Batman punching, that's Scorpion, right? He's punching Scorpion. Yep. That is pretty cool. I do see how you actually use the articulation there, Ronnie. You definitely use the articulation.
Yeah, so for those of you actually who are listening to the audio version of the show, the podcast, Ronnie, my brother, actually sent a picture of it. It's basically Dark Knight Returns Batman punching Mortal Kombat Scorpion in the face and basically knocking him off of a platform, and it's pretty cool. So,
David Mott says, "Finish him."
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. So yeah, I just wanted to share that because I thought that was kind of cool.
That is cool. All right, that is cool. And it does show the value of articulation for a guy that's not big in articulation. I actually appreciate that. See, I can see other people's points of views that are different than my own. I can see it.
But a novel idea. you have the perspective of an open mind. So
that's exactly right.
All right, so now I think we should go ahead and segue over to Streaming Wars, just because we're at 1 hour, 18 minutes. All right, so we didn't really set up pop culture very much. We just kind of went into it. Do you want me to
set up? I don't think we need to be setting up. I think we just...
All right, yes, go right to it.
Let's get into it.
Here we go. All right, so I know Eric has got some stuff for Streaming Wars this evening.
Yeah, this is a pretty huge deal, actually, and I'm sure a lot of you have already heard about it, but it's definitely worth talking about on this show because, we've always said, Dave and I essentially we are DC guys, and even though we love Marvel, we appreciate it and all that kind of stuff, I would say that I am personally a DC guy, and this is going to have incredible repercussions for the entire DC, all DC properties, because they're finding a new home. So this is directly from the AT&T website. I went straight to the source instead of an actual news article. So AT&T's Warner Media and Discovery Inc. are creating a standalone company by combining operations to form a new global leader in entertainment. And if you could see this, what we've got here is basically it's got AT&T, Discovery, and Warner Media right there at the top. Then right below it is Discovery Plus and HBO Max. So clearly, they're emphasizing the streaming aspect of this merger. That's right at the top, Discovery Plus, HBO Max. This is a merger meant for streaming. But then when you look at these other brands, which they have like, things like the Food Network, Home and Garden TV, Warner Brothers Studios, HBO, CNN, Cartoon Network. And then right at the end here, Dave, which I think is kind of funny. Look at the logo. That's the last one they have printed there. It's DC. So DC is moving to this new independent company. Now, one of the things you don't see on here, and there's a lot of conjecture about what's going on, is Warner Brothers Games. Warner Brothers Games is not shown on any of these logos that we see from the official AT&T website. And the latest reporting that I've heard is that they are going to split Warner Brothers Games. In other words, some of it will actually stay with AT&T, which I think makes sense because maybe AT&T wants to get into like mobile gaming. That would make sense to me anyway. That maybe they want to try to have some sort of arm to do that. Because we had reported earlier that AT&T was really interested in selling Warner Brothers Games, and there was a lot of rumors that they were going to sell them, but then they took them off the market. And now they've done the Discovery deal. So the latest news is that Warner Brothers Games is going to be split, and they haven't decided which ones are going to the new company, and which parts are going to stay with AT&T. Again, this is speculation on my part, but it does make sense to me that AT&T would want to keep some gaming assets if they want to get into mobile gaming, which would make a lot of sense with their sort of new branded company. Personally, I think this is a great move. I don't think AT&T really ever knew what to do with Warner Media. I think them being independent and teaming up with Discovery is a much better plan, and it is a path to taking on Disney and Netflix. That's my hot take on it. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I think the first thing I think of is, man, I'm glad I'm not working in the DC offices, because now you got yet another boss who might be looking to let heads roll. I don't know if there's that many heads left to roll over there, to be honest. So I'm glad I'm not there, because I'd be sweating bullets right now. Because I know they did show, the head of either the film division or something or whatever for Warner Brothers. They showed him the door as soon as the deal was done, and that's got to be rough. So that's my initial reaction is how much more culling of personnel we're going to have because of this, which is always never good. In addition to that, I guess my big thing with this is we'll see what this means for the future. And it's interesting, too, because a lot of people – like the way this is being reported, it is being reported as a merger, but there's quite a few people that are basically just saying that AT&T just sold, essentially sold all this stuff, that's kind of weird when you think about it, because when you consider what they paid to acquire all of it, and then basically it seems like within a matter of months, they're just like going, take it. We don't want it. So it makes me wonder at the end of the day,
I don't think that's an appropriate way to look at this. You can go down, down further in this particular article, and under the terms of the agreement, basically it says AT&T is going to receive about $43 billion in a combination of cash, debt securities, and Warner Media's retention of certain debt, and AT&T shareholders, which full disclosure, I am one of them, would receive stock representing 71% of the new company, while Discovery shareholders will own 29% of the new company. And it says the board of directors are both AT&T and Discovery. They have to approve the transaction. So it's kind of weird. It's kind of different because this is not them selling their company, so to speak. They have created a new company essentially with Discovery, which I don't know of any real precedent for that. I mean, the closest thing I can think of is when Viacom CBS split, and they split Paramount and CBS, but they split them into fully independent companies. And of course that was a disaster, and they ended up putting them back together. But in this case, you're having a division of your company merge with another company, but you're still going to have significant stake in that company. So, you know, it's a lot more complicated, you know, than I guess at the surface when you would say, oh, they sold off, you know, Warner Media. That's not quite accurate.
Well, and I can see that, but it's just kind of weird at the end of the day when you look at the machinations of what AT&T has done with all of this between acquiring, you know, Time Warner to where it is now. It makes you wonder, what was the original plan? You know, I guess that's kind of the thing I find a little weird. But as far as what this means moving forward, like I said, I think a lot of people are going to get laid off, and I guess we'll see where they are. It's weird, too, because a lot of these announcements for this Superman animated series and the Batman animated series and a lot of these other things that were recently announced, they were in the wake of this announcement, because this announcement had actually come out first and then these other projects had been announced later. So it makes me wonder, you know, what all this is going to mean, you know, moving forward, because I can't remember if it was, I think it was AT&T or someone had baited. No, it was, I think it was Warner Brothers itself under AT&T's management had actually canceled a couple of popular shows that were considered all ages, meaning that, you know, adults could enjoy them as well as children, and that they had actually decided to pass on renewing a lot of those shows because they said moving forward, cartoons are only for children. They're only for kids. There's like a lot of weird stuff coming out. You know what I mean? When AT&T was like,
oh yeah,
just totally in charge. And there's like all this just weird stuff coming out. And like, what in the hell is that supposed to mean? So, you know,
that's my point is I feel like when they were part of AT&T, the messaging was very confused. The direction was very confused. I feel like what they're trying to do here is just try to make a solid, independent entertainment company where that's the focus. They don't have to deal with all the other stuff. And also that kind of frees up, you know, AT&T, that they don't have to be trying to look over everybody's shoulder and second guessing them about, hey, this isn't going to work or whatever, because I don't think they really understood that industry to begin with. So I think that this is a good thing. It made sense from the perspective on paper that it would be neat for a cellular phone company to basically have this integration with streaming, right? With the streaming service. On paper, that sounded great. But in reality, it's two different worlds. AT&T is a technical company, a broadband company, cellular phone company. They have a completely different way of looking at the world than somebody at Warner Brothers who is trying to make movies and television shows and comics for that matter. You know, that's the problem. And I think that I think going forward, this could be a really good move for them. But as you mentioned, time will tell.
Well, and this puts a lot of water on those rumors I'd been hearing, too, that there was a group of, you know, fans and a couple of people with deep pockets looking to try and buy DC away from AT&T. There was a lot of talk about that. So I think this puts a lot of, you know, kind of puts a lot of those rumors, you know, kind of to bed now, you know what I mean? Cause I guess potentially we could still see something happen with DC, like at the 11th hour, you know what I mean? But I don't know. It's been weird. A lot of the consolidation stuff and what has been happening in the entertainment industry has been interesting to look at from an outsider's standpoint. But at the same point, too, just to talk about, you were talking about how, you know, you have skin in the game because you own AT&T stock. I have skin in the game here, too, because every time they do this, my royalty checks from DC seem to come in a little bit later. So,
yeah.
You know, that was my initial thought when I heard this. I was like, great. Okay, what does that mean? Does that mean I still get a royalty check? Or do I not get a royalty check now? Or how long is that going to take? Or hell, I don't know. So I don't know. I guess that's the thing. It's like some of this has just got so many moving parts to it. I don't think we're going to know exactly what this means for probably at least a year. But because a lot of the stuff that's been announced was under that weird, I guess we'll call it that weird time where it was just AT&T in charge, right? Like, so
yeah.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. Yeah, something related to this too. I don't know if you saw, Eric, but they did announce a Injustice animated movie they're going to do. That was another one of those weird projects that got announced. It was like, they're like, you know, Discovery and Warner Brothers are one. And you're like, what? And then right after that, they're like, oh, new Batman series, new Superman series, Injustice animated movie. I'm like, wait, well, slow down. What just happened? It's like all of it happened at once, it seemed like. So,
yeah,
a lot of, I don't know how to react to any of this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see ultimately what happens with Warner Brothers Interactive. I'm definitely interested to see how that actually pans out, because that's the one aspect of the story that's gotten the least amount of coverage. Apparently there's no real official announcement as far as the fate of Warner Brothers Interactive.
Interesting. All right. Do we have any comments that we want to get to here in the Rogues Gallery before we go to the outro?
Hollywood Jackson is in the house. He said, hey, and he also said, AT&T, Time Warner, Taco Bell, U.S. long distance. How may I direct your call? I like that, Hollywood Jackson. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And that's part of the issue that I think was going on is on paper, it sounds like a great idea. I think on paper, it sounds like an awesome idea. If I'm doing broadband and I'm doing cellular networks and stuff like that, having my own streaming platform sounds like a great idea. But it's two completely different worlds. When it comes down to directing a media company versus, you know, a telecommunications company, you're talking about techies versus, you know, creatives. You know, it's different world, you know. Very few people can do both. There are people that can do both. You know, my dad was an engineer and he also did animation. But, you know, very few people can do both. Very often it's really one or the other, you know.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, do you have anything else for Streaming Wars? Because I don't have anything.
No, that's it. And
all right,
I think we've kind of gone a little longer than I would have liked. So.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot to cover. I mean, it was a lot of news, you know. So
yeah,
a lot of big news too.
A big contrast to last time where we were kind of like digging for stuff. Yeah, there's been a lot of news lately. There's no doubt about that. There's been a lot of stuff going on.
And I had originally intended I was just going to do just the trading card stuff, for example, like in the collector's, you know, the main focus of the collector's corner on the front end of the show. But then, you know, when that Midnight Suns persistent rumor kept coming up, and I was like, well, we need to address this and use that to give new light to these books that I wanted to recommend for those people that are, you know, curious to get into that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I felt like it's important. So, all right. Absolutely. So if that's good, I think we'll just go ahead and go to the outro. And before we do the outro, though, this Sunday we will be having the next of, again, we're going to two times a week. So you've got Thursday, 7 o'clock. And then we also have the new show that is Sunday at noon. So this Sunday at noon, the retro review, or the Rogues retrospective, whatever we're calling that, Rogues, well, Eric has decided it's a Rogues retrospective. He just put it out of the screen, everybody. So the Rogues retrospective on Sunday at noon is going to be the original Terminator movie. So that's what we're going to be discussing and doing a Rogues retrospective for. Eric may be joining us, or we may have a guest host. We'll know more about that day of, how that's going to actually shake out. Eric is going to be in California filming Staycation. He'll join us if he can. And if not, we will have a guest host on the show. And more than likely, we'll just go ahead and say Ronnie Schnick's going to be our guest host, hopefully on Sunday. And that's what that's going to be. So hopefully watch the Terminator and join us for the discussion, hopefully. Or if you've seen it so many times, you don't have to rewatch it. Just join us for the discussion. All right. So I want to thank you for watching or listening to this episode of Retro Rogues Live. I'm doing a horrible job of keeping us to 45 minutes or 1 hour, but maybe next week it'll be better. Who knows? So I want to thank you for watching this episode. I'm not going to, you know, waste any more time by plugging stuff about me anyway, but I want to thank Eric Alexander, my great co-host, for obviously being here on the show, providing his unique perspective and opinions on all these great topics. Eric, tell the folks hopefully watching or listening at home where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
Well, first of all, I will plug Dave's t-shirt company, Kirby Tees, because they are an official sponsor of the show. So please check that out, because that is our official merchandising outlet if you want anything retro rogues, plus all sorts of other wonderful creations they have there at KirbyTees.com. So please check that out and please support them. As for me, I am most active on Twitter. You can find me at BassGod14 at BASSGOD14 on Twitter. DMs are always open. Willing to hear some feedback from you, or if you have recommendations as far as things that you want us to review. And of course, that includes collectibles, includes TV shows, comic books, all sorts of different things that we cover on the Retro Rogues Live. BassGod14 is also the official YouTube and also the official Twitch. So more likely than not, if you make a comment there, you're probably going to hear from me. Although Dave is pretty active on there as well with the Retro Rogues Live YouTube site, which we haven't really done much with. We got to talk about that and see if we can get some more stuff going on with Dave's YouTube as well. So appreciate everybody's comments. We do have a couple comments left for her. So Hollywood Jackson, I believe he was talking about AT&T. He said it's run by a group of janitors. I hadn't heard that before, Hollywood, if you say so. James mentions, so glad to see you guys. As always, another great show. David Mott says, thanks. And Hollywood Jackson says, sweet, Terminator, great show, guys. And with that, we will leave him with the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Five the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14. That's BASSGOD14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.